Hello and welcome to this live episode of Scrappy ABM. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and I am incredibly excited to be joined by two of my favorite people in the world, specifically in the little world of ABM. So we're joined by Ryan Gunn. And if you don't know Ryan Gunn, get back on LinkedIn and you'll see him pretty obviously, especially in the world of attribution. And then our lead strategist over here at Scrappy ABM, Amanda Palmerchuk, who I've known for like, what, 5 years at this point? And I learned most of what I know about ABM from Chuck. So excited to... one, have her on the team, and then two, dig into this ABM retrospective. They'll do intros in a second. I just want to give super quick context. What are we doing today? So glad everybody asked. Ryan, Chuck, when was this program built?
We started this probably around like November 2020.
Yep. So this is a program that pretty significant impact. Ryan, when you were working at the, and we're going to keep it anonymous for purposes, but if you really want to find out, just go look two jobs back for Ryan. It's not crazy hard to figure that out, but this had major impact. And the goal here is the two of you, and I say this with love, have more experience now, and you're both smarter when it comes to building out programs. And what we want to do is we want to look back and say like, man, what did we like kill back in 2020 when we first built this program? What are the things that didn't work well, but now that we have more experience, we would have done differently. And then with the advancements that have happened in the ABM space, what didn't we have the opportunity to do that we wish we had at this time? So that's what we're walking through today. I'm super stoked. Before we dig any further, Ryan, who the heck are you?
Hey, thank you, Mason. It's great to be on. I've been, of course, following everything you've been doing with Scrappy, and we talk every once in a while, but I think this is the first time we've been on a webinar together.
There's no way.
But yeah, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Ryan Gunn. I'm the founder of Attribution Academy. We're an education platform where HubSpot users can come and learn how to do marketing attribution and learn how to tie marketing activity to revenue.
I love it. Chuck, who the heck are you? Also, why am I calling you Chuck?
No worry, but I'm going to start with that as my intro. So hello, I'm Chuck, or also known as Amanda Palmerchuk. Anyone can call me Chuck. I am a strategist that specializes in ABM, specifically at Scrappy ABM. I am one of the lead strategists there. And I've been in the world of marketing for almost two decades, actually, but in the last 7 years, solely focusing on ABM and understanding ABM and trying to refine that, and have helped countless organizations over those years build programs, not even just from scratch, but also just very specific to those different stages within the progression stages that you would want to impact in order to see the goal for everyone, which is revenue, right? So I'm excited to be here. I feel like this is a big week for me. I think just last week I recorded a podcast with you, Mason, and then maybe we were on a webinar, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe, together.
We do a lot of content, so.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I heard Mason's doing like five webinars this month.
Yeah. Very accurate. So
that's a conversation for another day. So that said, let's go ahead and dig into it. Again, what I'd love for everybody to go ahead and drop in the comments is just like, where are you in your ABM journey? So are you starting ABM and you're trying to like build buy-in and figure out the plan? That's you. Side note, go to scrappyabm.com/workshop. We're hosting a 6-hour workshop a week from today, where we'll walk through exactly how to build it. My presentation I just finished last night, it's 280 lines of content with 6 additional templates that'll go along with it. So it is the best piece of content that I think we have ever created. So if that's you, I hope to see you next week. If you're doing ABM and you're just kind of stuck and need support on finding new traction, hopefully we'll have a lot of new insights for you today on things that we have tried and failed and a couple things that we've done right. And lastly, if you're scaling ABM, I would love for you to actually be an active participant in the comments and start answering people's questions as well. Because as you're scaling up, you're ahead of like 80% of people. Literally 80% of ABM programs have failed. So if you're already scaling, you've got some insights and we'd love to hear them. So that said, go ahead and drop those in the comments. We're going to keep rolling. Quick side note, if you drop something in the comments because of StreamYard, there's about a 15 to 20 second delay. So I will see that here in about 15 to 20 seconds. So that said, we've already done this. We're ahead of schedule. I love it. So let's talk about the core truth of ABM. ABM is a trust engine. One of the things that I have said often is no one can buy from you if they don't know you exist. So if you're trying to figure out how do I scale my ABM program? Well, Do audiences know you exist? And do they trust what you're actually outlining? So again, Ryan, as we talked about this idea of doing this webinar, can you just outline really quickly, like, because I'm not going to do it justice, like that $0 in pipeline at 6 months to 7 million in influence at 18. Can you just like quickly tell us the high level of like what was happening internally as you were having these conversations, like 6 months of like, I promise, like, we've got it. Like, just trust us.
Yeah. So when I joined the company, I was their first marketing hire. So they had been coasting for like 15 years on really positive word of mouth. They had like pretty much dominated this niche that they were in, but they were seeing opportunity in another market segment. They wanted to do some expansion. They didn't have the relationships already established that they needed to grow into that segment. So that's where marketing comes in. So I came on to basically build their marketing program from scratch. And I was working with a consultant at the time, as well as Chuck and Mason and some other great people to really build out like a fully fleshed out ABM program. But we were starting from absolute zero. Like, they had no infrastructure built, no target account list, all of this stuff that we had to build out. And I'll mention also that the company was also going through a full rebrand. So that added some complexity on top of it. But in 6 months, we built out all of the infrastructure in HubSpot that we needed. We onboarded onto an ABM tool, Terminus, and did that whole integration and setup. And then did a lot of like internal, you know, getting buy-in and making sure that everybody was on the same page about like, we're doing an ABM program. This is how we're going to achieve this goal.
Yeah.
And at 6 months, that's about how long it took us. But at that point, we had influenced nothing.
I also just love the framing that you outlined of, we were breaking into a new segment and we had to first establish a marketing program that could build trust at scale. But then also the other component is like the trust that your organization had in you to build it from scratch, because that is no easy feat to not see pipeline in the first 6 months. So we'll dig way more into that. So again, Ryan, one of the things that you've already started to allude to the backstory of, like, again, you were doing ABM because you were breaking into a new market segment. Can you speak to the misalignment that was happening between marketing and sales just really briefly as we talk about this, setting the stage a little bit?
Yeah. So like I had said before, like, this was very much a sales-led organization. There were some salespeople there that had been at the company since pretty much day one. They'd been working there for 15 years. There was a really established sales culture there, and there wasn't that with marketing. And I think just right off the bat, there was some inherent mistrust. It was not any of these salespeople's first job. They've worked at other companies. They've worked with other marketing orgs. And the impression I got is that they had been burned in the past by marketing. They had been passed a bunch of really bad leads, and they kind of just wanted to do things their own way. They had already, like I said, kind of dominated this niche market segment. They were feeling pretty good about themselves, but expanding into that new segment was going to be really tough with the tactics that they had employed for the 15 years that they had been around.
Yeah. And Chuck, I'm curious, as you were stepping in as a consultant to help map out, all right, here are all the problems that we're going to have to work through to overcome. Is there anything else that on the backstory side were some challenges that you ended up helping this team overcome through the implementation of an ABM program?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as we're being pulled in, and as you mentioned, Ryan, there is like a full reconstruction of the brand, if you will, and how we're going to go to market, which is interesting. And I feel like coming into that scenario and introducing marketers who are saying, hey, sales, we're going to help you do your job, could be pretty insulting. I mean, looking back on that. But as we're coming in, the challenge is we're going to have a new message, a new audience that has not been tested across other channels or like in general, like we're starting from scratch. So we're expecting to see results on something that is not tested and has not been like verified. As a consultant coming in, that can be intimidating to you know, verify the data and hope that, you know, you see what you're expecting. So,
yeah, love that call out. So as we think about the good, because again, when we talk about ABM, a lot of programs do fail. And if I'm being entirely honest for a moment, right now, the situation you guys are outlining is ripe with red flags. We'll talk about the bad here in a moment. But it was successful. So despite things that I would hear, I'd be like, oh, that's not going to work. Like, this did still work. And when we were talking through this, there was executive sponsorship. There was smart ops and strategy. And then when there was the specific augmented support that enabled this program to be successful. Ryan, as you were thinking through specifically the executive sponsorship, like, why did you say this was actually what made or broke the program for you guys?
I think it's absolutely what made it. There were a few things that were working in our favor. One, marketing was reporting directly up to the CEO. We had a VP of revenue, and I was at a director level. So I very easily could have been reporting up through revenue, but the CEO was pretty hands-on when it came to like brand stuff. So I was reporting directly to him, and I think that allowed us to be on the same footing as sales leadership. And I think it would have been really hard to be pulling the rug out of under sales in terms of messaging and brand and all of this other stuff that we were changing, while also reporting up through that same structure. So that was beneficial. The other thing that we had going for us is the consultant I mentioned earlier. He was operating as the fractional CMO when I came on, and then kind of scaled back his involvement as I got onboarded. And he was absolutely great at pushing back where things needed to be pushed back upon. He had definitely already cemented trust and authority. Leadership at the company listened when he said something. And if we needed something to change and it was getting tough, then he was able to help us kind of break through that barrier.
Yeah. We should give this consultant a quick shout out because he is a wonderful human being. So if you don't know him, Mike DiPietro, go look him up. He's fantastic. So I hadn't even thought about it from that perspective of you can't foster organizational change from below. So like if you've been reporting into sales, it'd be really tough to say, hey, boss, can you change everything about what you're doing? And maybe I shouldn't use the word can't, because there are obviously humble leaders that are open, but it'd be really tough. That sound like I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, because sometimes when I hear like, oh, we directly reported to the CEO on the ABM program, depending on the CEO, that's also like worse. So like it really sounds like the organization was ready for change. And then you had the outside consultant with Mike that had, for lack of a word, like seen the movie before. And was trusted and could push back and say, no, this is the right thing. We just need to keep going.
Yeah. I think as much as marketing and sales should both be held responsible for revenue goals, every company I've worked at where marketing has reported up through a sales leader, it has not been it hasn't been good for alignment, because the sales leader has a goal to hit, and when they are your boss, they're going to push you for basically more leads at the expense of things like brand or building out operational infrastructure, which we will talk about shortly.
Oh, yeah. Shortly as in right now. So, Chuck, when we talk about like smart ops and strategy, I'm going to say this really bluntly. That's a really nebulous term. Because like when we talk about like ops, it's like that could be a bajillion things, or like strategy, like that's one of those buzzwordy things. So like when you talk about like what went well here, what were the specific things that you and this team ended up executing that allowed the operational foundation to come into play that was done in such a way that actually drove the ABM strategy forward?
Yeah, that's a awesome question. So before I answer that, I just want to kind of take a step back on the executive sponsorship for a moment and just add from a consultant perspective. I think that the two things that really supported in kind of the buy-in is context and then also focus. It's hard to not pull different threads that may not make sense in the grand scheme of your program, and having our consultant on board and being able to continue to say, hey, no, this is the focus, that was very helpful. And then also kind of just continuously kind of remind us, you know, why are we here? So I would definitely say I appreciated that. From a smart ops and strategy perspective, the tech certainly helped, but it was the way in which we utilized it. So there was a very, very specific and very intentional way of actually creating audiences that synced if they could. If not, it's a manual process. And that was all documented as far as what the process should be, who would be responsible for what, when they should be doing it, what those triggers are. And it was very detailed in regards to how to utilize the operations and how to use the technology that we had. And all of that was baked into the strategy. It wasn't just like the awesome messaging, it wasn't just the awesome targeting and like, these are the amazing accounts that we want to go after, but it was those nitty gritty details that both Ryan and I think we spent a lot of time kind of building out different like mind maps and workflows of, okay, well, this is going to happen. And when this happens, what takes place in order to make sure that it doesn't fall to the wayside. So I think that was really good, spending the time to actually think through that entire process.
I love that. And it's something that I've seen our team do that I didn't know 2 years ago. Like, I was just a solo marketer, so I just built everything myself and didn't have to collaborate that much with that many people. So it's really easy for me to like go build the workflow and then fix it. But especially in more complex ops environments, if you build something operationally and then you turn it on and it breaks everything else because you didn't think about the full ramifications before you launched it, really tough, especially since HubSpot rolled back like the data rollback feature. So like, you can't just like reboot HubSpot. It's like, all right, well, now we're going to go do a massive data cleanup. So I love specifically the mind mapping in the data visualization before the build process that allowed that alignment internally. So great call out there. Ryan, I'm curious, as you think about the augmented support component, because the other thing I don't think we have highlighted, you were the first marketing hire, but like also, I think for a while, the only marketing hire. So like, it was you, and then you looked around, you're like, well, all right, like I got to build all this stuff until you got some augmented support. So why was that something that made this a successful program?
Yeah, truly could not have done it without you guys. I probably spoke to Chuck more than I talked to any of my other coworkers, just because we were so in the weeds on things. I think one of the things that I'm the proudest of that we did is like how tightly defined our target account list was. Because one thing that I see a lot of companies making the mistake of doing when they're implementing ABM is they go super broad with their target account list. They're like, we're going to have 1,000 target accounts. And we went relatively narrow. I think we had a total tier one, tier two, tier three, all combined list of about 200 target accounts. And we were able to like tier those in a way where we put a lot more focus on those tier one accounts and did more like one-on-one programs. But yeah, like you said, it was just me for a little while. It was me and you guys and Mike, the consultant we were working with. And then after we showed the success of this program, about a year in, we got some new marketing hires. And suddenly I had an internal team in addition to those external resources. And each additional resource that we got just like compounded how effective we could be.
Well, you hinted at it, and I think it's actually the right play, which is you started with an outside agency, scaled it up, and then you brought the resourcing in-house. It's like, I think most people should build stuff. It's like contract, validate, internal. So I love that framework.
The one key thing that I would add to that is, and this was absolutely critical in getting those additional resources, is that we needed to be able to measure and show the success of the program. You can't just like run it on vibes. and hope that people notice that you're doing a good job. Part of the infrastructure we put into place was being able to show, hey, we're influencing these deals. We've influenced this much revenue. We've generated, you know, these many demo requests from target accounts. And if we hadn't have been able to do that, I don't think any of those additional resources would have come.
And just to add to that, I'll even say, even before you get to that conversion stage, it was very interesting to see the target account list who is cold, who's never been on the site or has had any engagement at all with the organization. All of a sudden, now they know who you are. And they see, you know, you're getting the reach, you're getting some engagement, maybe not like conversion engagement, but you're introducing your brand. And I mean, that speaks volumes for just bridging that gap from a target account list perspective, which I think we did really well.
Yeah, especially considering the rebrand, there was not only awareness to new accounts that we were going after, but also reestablishing ourselves with companies that we had already had relationships with in the past.
Such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan, I'm gonna be honest. I don't know how this program was. Obviously, these things worked, but like all the things you outlined as we were working through, I was like, man, like the DAC was stacked against you. So hopefully if you're hearing this, and we're about to get into the bad and some of the ugly, it still can work. But as you clearly see, it needs sponsorship. It needs the right resourcing. It needs time. And above all, it really just needs the intentionality for what we're actually trying to accomplish, because you like very lightly breezed over it. But again, you got really tight on your target account list. So it wasn't like a haphazard, like we'll just start like 1,000 accounts and like just upload them into LinkedIn and like call that ABM. It was an intentionally coordinated effort that enabled this program to be successful. So I love those call outs. I'm going to go ahead and dig into what everybody's actually here for, which is the bad. Because like nobody really wants to hear that much of like, oh, great, you were successful. But like what happened that really could have gotten us derailed? So I'm actually going to go to Chuck first on the sales and marketing misalignment component. As you were coming in and being like, all right, we got Ryan and we got these salespeople and they are not on the same page. We're going to figure out how to get them on the same page. What happened? What was bad there?
Oh, goodness. So, you know, look, hindsight, 2020, right? And it can be embarrassing to like say this, but also it wasn't so obvious at the time. Going in and trying to explain what you are wanting to build without the context of the why and what you're actually trying to solve in building alignment, learned the lesson really quick that it can be, it doesn't feel good. It could be coming across like I'm trying to solve all the things that you've created, like problems you've created, or, you know, coming in to do your job versus, hey, actually, you know, I haven't been helping you in the way that I should be. Like, let's align on this, like, and let's work on it together. I definitely could have positioned things in a different way to where it actually showed like, hey, we're trying to support you, not take anything away from what you're doing and from, you know, just how you are commissioned and how you're living your life and how you survive. Definitely would reframe that if I'm going back and not look at it in the same way.
I would say another big misstep there with the sales marketing alignment actually kind of came as part of the ops stuff that we were doing. This is the one thing that if I could go back and undo one thing, we were putting marketing qualified leads straight into the deal pipeline. We created an earlier stage in the deal pipeline. And this was before HubSpot had leads. It was before, you know, it was before custom objects. There was no real place to put an MQL other than just like track it on the contact record, which doesn't work very well, or create a deal for it. And that, I thought that was going to be a good way to approach it. And it caused so much confusion. It absolutely wrecked conversion reporting. It was pretty disastrous. And it made that relationship with sales so much more contentious, because suddenly their dashboard that they used for their day-to-day was flooded with stuff that, honestly, some of it was probably a little early for them to be working on. And they did not like it at all.
And before you blow up this entire webinar and just say, forget it, Mason, the thought process was also when you activate sales. So when you activate them on indicators and triggers that suggest that there is an account in market and not necessarily like ready to buy. So there was some definition issues that we could have done better for sure.
I'm not planning to blow up the webinar. Part of this was things we realized we would do differently moving forward.
We've learned since then.
Yeah, for sure. But like, man, I didn't know that. And as a side note, now you're making me rethink our pipeline because we have a known opportunity stage in our pipeline. And I'm not looking at conversion reporting because I'm really close to our data. Plus, it's going to make it really tough to scale down the road. So
yeah,
thanks, Ryan. Anyway, unrealistic expectations. I think this is really interesting because if we frame it at the beginning of we had zero pipeline in 6 months and then 7 million in 18 months, that feels like really realistic expectations at the end result. So I'm curious, as you then said, this is a bad thing. What were the unrealistic expectations that happened through the program build?
There's a lot of, especially the way we did it, which we'll talk about this in the next bullet point as well. But this was an expensive program. There was a lot of upfront investment. And when you hit, you know, we started this in November. So you hit the end of the year and there's nothing to show for it. 2 months in, end of year reporting looks very bad. And then even beyond that, like it was a long time before we were able to show really any positive momentum. And I think the expectation from leadership and from sales was that it was going to be much more of a linear path to success where 2 months in, we've done $1 million. And that was just like, not even close to the case. I would say in like months 5 and 6, it was kind of scary. I was worried that I was going to get let go because we just hadn't shown anything. But I knew that we were, that once we launched it, we would. But that was not meeting the expectations that the rest of the company had.
I was super clear. Because I don't even know if you know this, but when I was also working at this company, I had a similar experience where it was like, we're building, because I was the first marketing hire. So we had to build everything from scratch. And I got to my like annual review and they're like, so what are we doing? And then like 3 months later, we generated like 3 million in pipeline. It's like, it just took time to build. It's like, I promise. So anyway, how did you reset the expectations? Because I was bad on my side. I don't think I did a good job when I was in this seat. So like, how did you reset the expectation to make sure that like you actually got to the 18 month timeline?
I don't know that I really did. I think it was a combination of things that worked out in our favor. One is that you guys were just a delight to work with, and like our CEO would get on calls with you guys, and there was a good interpersonal foundation there that I think gave a lot of leeway to the performance. And the other thing is, I think, you know, as much as the investment up front was difficult and resulted in difficult conversations, there was also some like sunk cost bias going on where they were like, well, we've already spent so much money, we have to see this through.
Man, just a softball transition to overinvested in tech too soon. So speaking of that sunk cost fallacy, talk us through the, like, I mean, a lot of marketers wish they got the technology. So help me understand, you're saying it was bad. Like you had too much tech on the front end, which that seems to be not what anyone experiences. So I'm curious, like, why do you think you overinvested in tech too soon?
Yeah, we use Terminus. And I had not used Terminus before. I was really excited to get my hands on it, probably a little overeager. And over the course of using it, it showed me all of the things that we could have done without it first. And that if I were to do it today, like I would take a much slower approach to tech investment. Because I think tech needs to support your strategy, not define it. And if you're starting with the tech tool, then you're doing it backwards.
Something else I would add to that is as something that was probably the bad that we've learned thus far, there's a ramp up period for all of these different milestones that you do. So there was the ramp up period of actually creating and building the net new brand, a ramp up period of actually buying, implementing, training, using a tech stack and then learning from those learnings and then iterating on and then expanding and optimizing, all while still honing in on your audience and identifying who's in market and who's not in market. I mean, there's so much that is like goes into the research piece that wasn't accounted for, I believe, in the expectations of when you start investing in things and you're hoping that it's going to solve a revenue problem sooner than later. And I think that like if we had had conversations before of setting those expectations, it probably wouldn't have felt so much of a sting in identifying that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think what we ended up building was overkill. I think we could have done a lot of it just in HubSpot and through, you know, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, all of that kinds of stuff. We did not need this like big expensive, I think we were paying like 60 or 70K a year for it. The first couple of months of that, we weren't even doing any of the advertising through Terminus because we were still building stuff. So it was one of the biggest learnings of my career, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. We built the company. So, but I mean, truly, it with how much exists today with like really, really great data mapping before you build in the tech stack, like you can build some really killer ABM programs and like a very basic CRM and marketing automation platform. And then the way that we've thought through it is as you build and you have a strategy, there are still going to be gaps that you bump up against. And that's when you buy the technology to solve the specific gap in the existing program that's already running to optimize it and make it better. Not, I loved your framing of your tech stack shouldn't inform your strategy. Your strategy should inform your tech stack.
Yeah.
So,
and I think there's something to be said for testing stuff, building unsustainable workarounds, you know, just to make sure it works. And then once you've proven, hey, this can be successful for us if we do it in a scalable way, then you get the tech to support that scalable function and replace those like janky workarounds that you've built.
Preach it. The amount of money that we have spent over here at Scrappy AV on technology is less than 1% of our annual revenue. But we've scaled to be a $2.5 million business with like next to no technology other than basic CRM, marketing automation tools. And like now we're looking at how do we augment and scale through better technology. But I mean, we've done this for now 2 years just with like brute force and determination. I can't wait to implement the technology because I actually know what problems we need to solve, which sounds way better and like a way better way to invest. I love that call out. Steve has dropped a question. I'm going to go ahead and answer or ask Steve's question to both of you. If you are here, one, thank you. Two, if you've got questions, go ahead and drop those in the comments. Ryan, I'm going to go to you first and then check if you've got anything to add. Question is, how do you all feel about MQLs today? TechTarget promoted a push to abandon the MQL in favor of the MQA, aka the marketing qualified account, with the framing that the overall account behavior is a better indicator of customer interest than an individual, with the example being 23 people download the same white paper versus there are 37 actions from two individuals. So Ryan, as you go back to like that MQL example of we dropped MQLs in our sales pipeline, are you more in favor of the MQA today, or are you still a big proponent of the MQL, or do you like any marketing qualified acronyms at all?
Yeah, I think MQLs is, it's such a contentious topic, and I've posted on LinkedIn about it extensively. About how it's a bad measure of marketing success. I do like the MQA. That's actually something that we eventually started using in this program that we're talking about. And we stopped putting leads, marketing qualified leads into the sales pipeline, ended up just making it all an account focus. And that worked really well. The thing that I more often recommend is looking at like dollars of pipeline generated instead of a volume lead number as a better measure of marketing success. But specifically for ABM, I think doing marketing qualified accounts And then also having a metric around penetration into those accounts where you are looking at the contact level and you're saying, we are engaged with 15 people at this target account.
Chuck, what do you think?
Mic drop. That was fantastic. I couldn't have said it better, honestly. I think that, you know, if you take a look at like adding in the metric of the account penetration and then measuring that based off of the engagement you're seeing, so you can really qualify, say, okay, is this like somebody that's highly engaged versus someone that is like clicking around and those types of things. I think, yeah, I couldn't have said it better. That was awesome.
And for those of you trying to figure out how to operationally do account penetration in your current CRM, a report based on your target accounts and then the number of associated contacts. And if there's more contacts associated to specific accounts and you're not doing data enrichment, you know that you're getting some form of account penetration based on relationship mapping. So that was a really easy breakdown. If you want more information on that, go talk to Ryan.
I was going to say the other thing you can do based on a feature that HubSpot released today. Is there's now formula fields in custom reports. So you could do, you know, number of contacts that you've engaged with divided by the total number of employees at the account. And then you're looking at a percentage of penetration, which is...
That's way better.
Yeah. If you're dealing with a range of company sizes where some of them are 10 people, some of them are 200 people, being engaged with one person at a 10-person company is way different than being engaged with one person at a 200-person company.
It's like you know how to do attribution. Love it. Let's talk about pipeline reality. So I actually really love this breakdown here because I think it is a realistic timeline. We have talked a lot about the ABM program build timeframe being an 18 to 24 month process. And people are like, cool, so like 3-month pilot program. And I just love the reality that's here. So Ryan, can you just walk us through, as you talk about the first 6 months, we talk about groundwork, like functionally, what are we doing in those first 6 months to lay the groundwork for a successful program?
Yeah, the first 6 months, it was a lot of like, let's get together in a Zoom meeting and talk about how this is going to work. It's defining that target account list. There was so much work that we put into the messaging and how it would resonate with that target account list. We did market research. There's like truly an incredible amount of effort was put into like, these are the words that we need to use when we're talking to these accounts. And these are the words that we need to stop using because they don't resonate.
Yeah. Donald Miller said people buy things because they read or heard words that convince them to buy something. So when we talk about groundwork, I think all of our minds typically go to the ops component. We talked a lot about that, but I love the call out of just like, we rebranded the company and we went after a new segment. We don't actually know what to say to these people. It's like, let's make sure we say the right thing so that they actually want to come and buy from us. Because if we don't, we're going to spend a lot of money on paid media that will make sure we have the wrong message in front of the right audience, which is obviously the recipe for success. So for those of you that are listening and not looking, that was sarcasm. All right, moving into the infrastructure alignment. Chuck, months 7 through 12, like when we talk about this idea around infrastructure and alignment, you've already alluded to some of these components. But I'm curious, is there anything else tactically that we want to outline as far as like what people should be expecting during that 7 to 12 month timeframe?
Yeah, it's a lot of trial and error in a way when it comes to like your data flows and ensuring that the right triggers are firing off to identify when an account is engaged and like when sales should prioritize those. So there's probably going to be some false triggers or some false signals that you need to kind of work through. And then from an alignment perspective, it's the constant reiteration of like why we're here, what we're trying to build. You know, we're in this together and just always kind of taking a step back and looking at like the bigger picture before you dive into the weeds. I think that those were the main things that continued within that time frame that really helped lead to success.
Love it. And then Ryan, we'll come back to you. 7 million influenced. The way that this looks, it's like we had 12 months of nothing. And then in 6 months, we got $7 million. So I'm curious, was it a situation where it was like, We had early warning signals the whole way through from an engagement perspective. And then suddenly, all at once, we got all this pipeline and everything was amazing and fantastic. And it happened all at once. Or was it, was there some gradual pipeline? Like, help us actually walk through, one, what happened. And then two, how we can regulate our own emotions for the 12 months where there's not that much pipeline and we're like questioning our existence.
Yeah, we had a little bit of pipeline coming in the 7-12 months, but the vast majority of it truly was like closer to the end of that 18 months. And a big reason for that is that we were, like I said, breaking into a new market segment. It was an enormous awareness play at the beginning. We were just trying to say, hey, we exist. You should know about us. Yep. And that's nowhere near ready for sales conversations when you're doing that. So what we were seeing in the 7-12 months is a lot of just top of funnel engagement. People were clicking through our ads. They were visiting the website. They were downloading stuff that we put out, attending webinars maybe. And then that stuff started to trickle down. And we could see in the funnel reporting that we had built, this is one of my favorite things that we built, was the way we structured the funnel is, you know, obviously at the very top, like they have no idea who we are. You move down through these like awareness and consideration stages, but it's not just moving down. It was also moving back up. So like if someone hasn't engaged with any of our stuff for 6 months, are they still an MQL? No, they're not. They are like, they've got to move backwards in the funnel, which is a difficult thing operationally to do. But we could see basically like the bands of the funnel were widest at the top at the beginning. And then suddenly like two or three rungs down was wider than the top was. And we started getting way more demo requests. I mean, if you look at the amount of target accounts that had demo requests before we started this program, and then a year after that initial 6 months, the 7-18 months, huge increase. It was like a 40% increase there. Website visits and other like top of funnel engagement was up 150-200%. And then that stuff does eventually trickle down to revenue.
Shoot. Something else I'd add real quick. Yeah, I mean, that was amazing. Something else I'd add real quick before Mason, you hop in, is I also think that what we did really well was identify the seasonality and like when it was like a hot season in comparison to kind of building the audience and building that recognition and engagement. And obviously the pipeline also shows that. So, you know, if there's some seasonality, you kind of have to like give it a second to like build that momentum before it really will like showcase the efforts.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because the company that I was working for was an event technology company. So highly seasonal. We obviously started the program in November when I came on. Not a ton of events going on in the winter. So actually probably not unusual to see not much happening in those first few months. And then by the end of the 18 months, we were, you know, in the fall, like heavy event season. So a lot of that, and the purchasing for those events happens in the summer or before. So we had really like the end of that 18 months was right at the end of probably our busiest seasonality of buying.
I've got some thoughts, but before I dig into that, Heather's got a great question, which is just for context. What was the average deal size and length of the sales cycle?
Oh, that's such an excellent question that I wish I remembered. I want to say that the average deal size was like 10 to 20K. This was like a hands-on event technology and services. So relatively large average contract value. And then the sales cycle was probably 3 months. So it was a complex process.
You hit on this already, but I just want to remind people, brand recall takes 3 to 6 months. So like if you're running a program to an audience that doesn't know you exist with intentional effort, it will take them 3 to 6 months to remember that you exist. As another reminder, you rebranded. So like you have to re-educate all your current audience and then educate a new audience that you even exist.
Yeah.
So this, for like, this adds up. And for everyone, it's like, we have to generate faster results. totally fair and totally fine. Start with people that know you exist.
You do that, you'll cut off 3 to 6 months of the program. So there you go. So hopefully there's some tactical advice for everybody.
As we think through just kind of these last couple of sections, like what not to do, I think we've already touched on this pretty directly of like, don't buy the expensive tools without a strategy. In 2023, one of the top three roles in marketing that was laid off was ABM managers. And I think it's because ABM didn't have executive buy-in because people didn't give it the time to actually build. They expected immediate results. When immediate results didn't happen, they had to cut somewhere, they cut ABM. So if you don't have buy-in, you're not
going to. The other thing that I'll say about that is that we call it ABM, account-based marketing. It is not just a marketing initiative. And I think a lot of companies try to adopt it under the impression that marketing will be the only one that needs to change. And it's really a like full GTM org strategy. Sales needs to change. Service needs to change. Like there's a lot of moving parts that need to happen that are outside of the marketing org.
Oh yeah. I couldn't agree more. And the last thing here is just like, don't rush the pipeline or don't rush the timeline. Sorry, pipeline and timeline, same thing. The other thing you touched on that I want to bring back is people often do like a 3 to 6 month pilot program for an ABM program. And for those of you that have never worked in a marketing agency, I'm going to tell you how marketing agency sales cycles work really quick. It's insane from about August through January. And then there's a little bit left with some stragglers that are buying for Q2 initiatives. And then you get to April 1st. And if you think you're going to continue to grow, you're not. You're the fool. Congratulations. It's April Fool's Day. You're not going to get much new pipeline from April, May, June, because it's the summer and no one wants to build new things. So what has happened every year that I've been in an agency is we have essentially next to no pipeline the last week of June. So if we launched an ABM pilot program for 3 months starting April 1st, and then we measured it based on the pipeline generated from April 1st to the end of June, which is a 3 month pilot program, no matter what I had done, it was going to be deemed a failure. But fun fact, we just got through that. And then after July 4th, we generated $3 million in pipeline in 2 weeks as a 15 person business because of all the work we did from April until June. So what I'm just simply outlining is if you're going to do a pilot program, which I do recommend people do, like do a minimum viable program, do it small, but not on a timeline, on a number of people involved, and then give it like 6-9 months. That way you actually let the timeline bake so that you can allow the sales cycle length to actually have a sales cycle length. And if you want to start with a cold audience, you can do 3 months of awareness building to then actually do 3 months of consideration building to then have 3 months of a sales cycle. That's a good pilot program. But if you think you're going to go from zero to revenue in 3 months with ABM, it's highly unlikely. Some people have done it. That's actually arguably worse if you actually do nail it, because now you've set this expectation that ABM is like this magical genie, when in reality, you probably got lucky. Sorry, I have very firm opinions about this, but don't do that, please. All right, now we have 5 minutes. So Ryan, walk us through very quickly, like what would you do differently?
The very first thing I would do is not buy Terminus 2 months into working there. Yeah, I think there was so much that we could have done just building things out ourselves operationally. And hopefully we would have scaled to the point that we do require a tool like that. But at the very beginning of an ABM program, you don't need a $70,000 a year tool that it only does ABM. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway. But in addition to that, like we said, it's a full organizational change. It's not just a marketing one. You've got to get aligned with those other teams. And then, as we've harped on this whole time, give it time to bake.
Chuck, anything to add on to that?
I would just add, I love the bullet, align early, communicate often. I would also just add over communication, overly explain what is happening. I think I've learned that you might have like a set of expectations or something that you would assume everybody in your team knows or is looking at the same things as you. And that's definitely never the case. So always over explain and always like point out as often as you can things that you're seeing and opportunities for growth.
I love it. All right. Last couple of things, key lessons. ABM is a long game, so play it long game. So play it smart. Influence matters more than just pure attribution. So like sometimes deal acceleration is also super valuable. Nobody talks about that, but making sure we win the deals that are already in the pipeline is probably a really great place to start with an ABM program. And last thing is you can do more with what you have than you think. Probably not surprisingly, that is the premise of Scrappy ABM as a business. And it goes pretty okay for many of our clients. So if you're looking at building a program, start with what you got today and then scale it up. A couple things would just be, was this helpful? So if there was something that you're taking back to your team, go ahead and drop that in the comments because we want to hear it. And we want to make sure that we create more content on those things. By the way, if you liked this retrospective on what we would have done differently, next week we're doing a super deep dive. And I should have added the link apparently, just scrappyabm.com/workshop. So go to scrappyabm.com/workshop to do a 6-hour workshop with us on exactly how to build your ABM program. Thank you. We've got some time, like barely any time for questions. We will send out the replay if you don't already have it. Follow Scrappy ABM for some more. Do we have any questions? We're waiting on questions. Ryan, Chuck, thank you guys so much for being here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is fun. I always love hanging out with you guys.
Shoot again. Probably after my kiddo gets here. I'm not doing anything else after in the next 5 weeks. I just gotta make sure we
are either of you guys gonna be at Inbound?
I have a child that will be born the day of Inbound.
That would
however make Mason difficult. Is yeah, but Mason is gonna send me in his place. He just hasn't announced that yet.
Really putting me on the spot on
televised.
All right. Well, I have to go have a conversation with Chuck after this. Yeah, we'll drop the link. Steve, just again, it is scrappyabm.com/workshop. I'll also just follow up directly so you got the link. Or the other thing, if you just go to our website, scrappyabm.com, and you just like go to leave the page, there'll be a pop-up that says ABM in a day, and then it's my dumb face, and you can click the link to register. There it is. Again, everybody, thank you so much for being here today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one.